everyone, and welcome back to Pop Culture University, the university where you learn everything going on in the world of pop culture and see what life lessons you can get from it for your own life. Thank you for joining me today. It is a wonderful November day. Not for me, actually. I woke up and had the most excruciating back pain of my whole life. Last month at the gym, I was like doing the leg press at LA Fitness. And of course it was LA Fitness. Like, I feel like LA Fitness is the most messy, hectic, like scatterbrain of a gym. And I was on the leg press and I went, like, I don't know what happened, but as I was going down a few times, I just felt my spine like churn together in my lower back. I don't know what I did, but today I literally felt like I could not even get out of bed or walk or bend over to do the bend and snap. Like, it just hurts so bad. So if I'm extra low effort today, or I feel like, or I look like I'm dying, it's because I actually feel like I'm dying today. But it's okay. I'm getting an MRI in 2 days, and hopefully they just euthanize me if something is wrong. So that explains my maybe attitude, my Rachel Zegler-esque attitude today. I'm kidding. But we're going to be talking about her and why everyone does not like her on the eve of the Hunger Games prequel coming out that I'm so excited for. We're going to talk about that. We also need to talk about Keke Palmer, some disastrous things going on in her personal life with her father of her children abusing her. Extremely terrible news that came out. Very sad. Then we need to talk about Grammy nominations, of course. Those were released the other day, and we know I'm a prophet. Patty the Prophet, I've predicted who's going to win Album of the Year with the Grammys 6 out of the last 7 years correctly. So get excited for my predictions. We might talk about People's Sexiest Men Alive if we have time. I was going to do that last time. And what else are we going to talk about? One other thing. Oh, Taylor and Travis and Kylie and Timmy. Two strange couples that are carrying the concept of love on their back this year. Their back isn't breaking, unlike mine. But anyway, sit down, face forward, students. If you are on the visual version, like the video, subscribe. If you're on the Spotify version, screenshot yourself listening to it, post it to your Instagram story, tag me, I'll hit you up. Follow it if you haven't already. Spotify is giving all these new fun analytics where I can see the impressions and people who follow and people who don't. So I have your number and your name. If you don't follow, just kidding, I don't. And then Apple Podcasts, leave a like, leave a subscribe, whatever. Without further ado, students, take your seats. Pop Culture University is beginning. Put that on my mama, on my hood. I look fly, I look good. You can't touch my bag, but you could. I look fly, I look too good. Put that on my mama. Okay, so the bell ringer I want to talk about today is actually so, like, nasty. This is the lighter tea before we get into the heavier tea of the day. When you guys were in school growing up, did you guys have bell ringers? My math teachers would always start the class by doing some sort of bell ringer, just something easy before she absolutely bent us over with the pre-calc that no one understood and made you cry yourself to sleep every night at home. Like, why was math so hard growing up? And I hope you guys have been through the experience of crying with your parents multiple times because you did not understand the math problems. Like, I'm actually so mad at the school system for giving us all that PTSD because I do not use math ever in my daily life. And I feel like nothing beyond like algebra one should be required of anyone. But anyway, someone who clearly did not pass one single math class in their life growing up is Kodak Black. Kodak Black, if you don't know, he is like apparently a rapper. I don't know if he like actually has any credentials or any talent or fans. He is just a suspicious, insane looking man. Like, I'm going to say insane because he's the guy who threw hundreds of thousands of dollars off of a boat to prove how wealthy he was. I don't know if you've ever seen that video. He was like on a yacht off of some coast of like Miami or something and threw hundreds of dollars into the sea, watched it lay on the ocean bed and then fall into the ground. I would have dove in after that. I've seen the Titanic. I know you freeze to death, but it would be worth the risk to get those hundreds of thousands of dollars. Then he flushed more hundreds down the toilet. I don't know. He, like, there's really no explanation for someone's behavior like that. Maybe he can get a lobotomy to help him. But now, since he's a rapper, he's made a new song called Kylie Grande. Kylie Grande. And it's about Kylie Jenner and Ariana Grande and how he basically loves them both so much and wants to get with them both so much that he wrote a song about them. And it is absolutely the worst song. And I think his career is like kind of flopping, and that's why he made this song. Maybe he just wanted to use both of their names for clout. But this is Kylie Grande. This is the intro to it. It's so terrible. So he wants Kylie Jenner twerking to that, and he wants Ariana Grande twerking to that. That is undoubtedly the worst song I've ever heard, and neither of them will be twerking to that. He gives like creepy uncle vibes who gets a little too close to his nieces. It's just giving like this should give him some sort of charge. That should be some sort of harassment that he made that song about them. Hopefully this will get him some streams. Good luck to you, Kodak Black, but I wish these rappers wanted more talent and less clout. He will never receive a Grammy nomination, but a lot of people who never got a Grammy nomination before were nominated this year. So let's talk about the Grammy nominations this year. They were really shocking to me, like totally came out of left field. I live for the Grammys. That was my favorite thing growing up. Every year, who was going to get nominated, who was going to win the award. Growing up, I didn't even like the performances. I just liked when the person like got to accept their award. Like when they read the nominees and the cameras went to all the five people's faces and everyone was nervous and they wanted to beat each other. And then they read the name and one person like smiles and is cheering and the other people look like they thought they're about to win and then get let down. And it's this huge roller coaster of emotion. That was my favorite moment. So I love the Grammys. They've definitely been disgraced a lot by a lot of artists who just don't really respect them anymore. They've been going down in views, and I would argue that they are losing a bit of their prestige in the world of music, but the Grammys are definitely still something people vie for, and it's seen as kind of the peak of like accolade you can get in the music world. So the Grammy nominations for Album of the Year, they upped the number to 8, as we know, for the last few years. Taylor Swift, Midnights. Miley Cyrus, Endless Summer Vacation. Olivia Rodrigo, Guts. SZA, SOS. Lana Del Rey, Did You Know There's a Tunnel Under Ocean Boulevard. John Batiste, World Music Radio. Janelle Monáe, The Age of Pleasure. And Boy Genius, The Record. It's interesting to me that Boy Genius is a group of three women and they named their album The Record. And then the Jonas Brothers just came out with an album this year and they're three men and they named their album The Album. Where has the creativity gone? Where has the creativity gone? That's what I'm curious about. But like, give us a better album title. Why would someone want to name their album The Album? Did this album mean nothing to you? Is it just a contractual obligation? Like your record label's like, I want an album or I want a record. They're like, here's the album. Here's the record. The Jonas Brothers were snubbed. They got 0 nominations this whole year. That's okay. They were also snubbed in like their personal lives. And their whole lives are kind of like crashing down right now. So sucks to be the Jonas Brothers. I'm so sorry for you guys. So who do I think will win? Who do I think will win of Album of the Year? I will say I think Midnights has a chance. I think SZA is probably the best contender in terms of like chart success. Out of all the 8 nominations, SZA was the number one most successful in maintaining the number one spot and moving the album sales in a more authentic way. Like, of course, Midnight's outsold with the vinyls and everything, but SZA's album really took over the whole year. The only thing that's stopping me from thinking that SZA will win is that I'm not sure the Grammys will appreciate some of the vulgarity of the album. They usually don't love over sexualization in albums, things of that nature. That's why last year I predicted correctly that everyone thought Renaissance would win. I knew it wouldn't win. It never really was a question in my mind that Renaissance was not going to win. So while everyone was surprised and there was an uproar, expected it. I predicted correctly Harry Styles would win just because he had all the makings of like the album of the year when it came to the big hits and it came to the emotional appeals and sort of public statements on the record. Like, they want something that is very impactful and emotional. And I would say SZA's was that. Like, she had those ballad moments, like Nobody Gets Me, but also in Nobody Gets Me, sure, she's singing in the back of a violin and piano, but she sang lyrics like, we was balls deep, now we don't talk and stuff. Like, she just expresses herself in that very fun way. But I don't know if lyrics like, we was balls deep, now we beefing, are gonna win her album of the year, but I think everyone's kind of expecting her to win. So I'll put it between my Taylor and SZA. I don't think Olivia stands a chance this year, unfortunately. Miley Cyrus definitely does not stand a chance. I was so surprised she even got the nomination, because Flowers, to me, outshined the whole rest of the album. Why do I feel like I was the only one who listened to the whole album? No one can probably name one other song on that album. You didn't name another song, did you? So good for her for getting the nomination. She's actually never won a Grammy, ever. Miley Cyrus has never won a Grammy. So I don't think she'll win album, but I think she will win one this year. That's all I'm going to say about album of the year. The only year I was wrong in predicting who would win was when John Batiste won. He's nominated again. So I'll give his whole album a listen before I make my decision this time. But I don't know. I love John Batiste. Like, good for him, but no one was really expecting him to win. So record of the year. Now, record of the year is probably the biggest award a single song can win. So record of the year is, nominees are Billie Eilish, What Was I Made For, Boy Genius, Not Strong Enough, John Batiste, Worship, Miley Cyrus, Flowers, Olivia Rodrigo, Vampire, SZA, Kill Bill, Taylor Swift, Antihero, and Victoria Monet, On My Mama. Can you believe Victoria Monet was nominated? I was thrilled. I was so happy. It's like seeing your friend that you've seen, like, be the bridesmaid like 30 times, like finally get the wedding, like finally get the nomination herself, because Victoria Monet has gotten so many people Grammys. Victoria Monet has written half of Ariana Grande's discography. She's won multiple Grammys. She's gotten I forgot who else she worked with. It was like another young pop star. Has she written for Beyonce? I forgot who else Victoria Monet has written for, but there was one other person who she wrote multiple songs for that got them Grammys. So good for Victoria Monet. I feel like her songs have been on like the slowest, like sleeper hit rise throughout the last few years. Jaguar, that whole album was so good. And now she has, the first time I heard On My Mama and she said the line, 'cause I'm deep in my bag like a grandma with a peppermint, I was like, oh my fucking God. It just felt different. It just felt like the song was different for her. So I'm so happy she's nominated. I love her. She makes all my pop girls better. She's incredible. And the industry, like, I feel like there's been this void for someone just like her for so many years. Like, I'm talking about like a singer, extremely good songwriter, extremely good singer, extremely good, just like a creator of the vibes, you know what I'm like? And dancer too. Like, she's just everything. So Why hasn't she gotten this success before? It was slightly shocking that she had the second most nominations this year behind SZA, because, like, I feel like the general public, like, Victoria Monet isn't a household name. But hopefully she will be this year, because she fucking deserves it. Do I think she'll win for Record of the Year? No, I do not. Unfortunately, I don't. The person I think should win Record of the Year is Flowers by Miley Cyrus. Totally took over the year. And I like that that song was debuted on New Year's Eve last year. So it was like, all of 2023, we were listening to that song. So it was really the song of the year. And then Billie Eilish, What Was I Made For? I think those both have excellent chances to win. SZA said she doesn't even like Kill Bill. So I don't feel bad about saying she won't win for Record of the Year. But yeah, I love all the people nominated. I'm excited to see. Record of the Year usually goes as planned. Like, that one never really surprises me. The person who wins, it's usually according to like something that makes sense. Last year, Lizzo won it for About Damn Time. She was my second pick. I thought Harry would win it for As It Was, but she was my number two. So I was like, okay, that makes sense. A little surprising, but I mean, she's gotten like canceled off the face of the earth, but I know she'll come back because I love Lizzo and I don't support the cancellation of her. One that really surprises me every year with the winner is Song of the Year. Remember last year when everyone was like, is it gonna be Beyonce, Taylor Swift, or Adele? Like, the holy trinity of songwriting excellence was up for the award, and Bonnie Raitt won. good for Bonnie Raitt. She's like a country artist. And yes, country music is known for like its storytelling. And that is definitely going to help you win a songwriter's award. Because Song of the Year is a songwriter's award. It's not about the vibe and the singer and the vocals. It's about the lyrics to the, it's about the pen to the paper. Something a lot of people wouldn't know about in this industry, but just wouldn't tell you until they expose their ghostwriters and they wish it was scrapped. Anyway, Song of the Year nominees, A&W by Lana Del Rey. I was so surprised by that. I was like, okay, secured the nomination, American Whore. Damn, I just didn't expect that to get in Song of the Year nomination. Chimmy Chimmy Coco. I don't know. I'm not the biggest like Lana fan, but I'm sure the gays like threw a pride parade after that got the nomination, because every time I would go to the club, that song was playing. Lana said on Twitter this year, she posted like a 2-minute video after her nominations, that she didn't know you had to submit your songs for consideration at the Grammys. Like she didn't know that you yourself had to submit your nominations. She thought you would just like get nominated if they heard your song and they liked it. So that may explain the lack of nominations for her in the past. But good for her. She figured out that she had to submit her songs for the win. That reminds me of like when my dad was like, I didn't know I had to sign you up for high school. And like multiple years I would be like kicked out of class because on the first day of school, because my dad didn't like sign me up. So yeah, you have to sign yourself up for these things, folks. Anti-Hero, Taylor Swift, Butterfly, John Batiste, Dance the Night, Dua Lipa, Flowers, Miley Cyrus, Kill Bill, Vampire, What Was I Made For? Well, I don't get why Dance the Night is up for a songwriter's award. The first time I heard that song, and actually every time I heard that song, I was astounded by the lack of depth in those lyrics. Those lyrics make no sense. Like, not at all. Like, we've heard a song like that 70,000 billion times. It actually confused me why Dance the Night was a hit at all. Like, Dua Lipa, something in her Dula Peepussy really just shines and sparkles on tracks, because anything she does turns to gold. She has a Midas touch. So good for Dua Lipa. Her new song, Houdini, by the way. Do you guys like it? It's a bop. I like it. It's giving very it sounds like Future Nostalgia, but I can also tell it's like the bridge to her new era that she said is more like psychedelic. So I love Dua's new song, Houdini, way better than Dance the Night, but I guess those lyrics really touched the Grammy Recording Academy. Okay. I think Vampire has a chance. It's very well written. But overall, I think the winner should be Taylor Swift for Anti-Hero. Like, who writes a song that says, did you hear my covert narcissism? My disguise as altruism, like some kind of congressman. Or I have a dream my daughter-in-law will kill me for the money. Like, and it's still a easily digestible pop radio hit. She just makes masterful songwriting look easy. Can you believe the songwriter of our generation has never won Song of the Year? Ever? She's never won that award? Insane to me. She was up for it last year for All Too Well 10-minute version, and she lost. I thought that was like her magnum opus. So I was like, damn, she'll never win. But Anti-Hero, I could definitely see winning. Good for all the nominees. I predict Anti-Hero to win for that. Let's talk about some of the snubs. So things that were snubbed for Album of the Year were the Barbie soundtrack. I was just so surprised by that, because I previously thought that album might win Album of the Year, because it truly had all the makings of like the rubric that I feel like the Grammy Recording Academy like grades off of for the Album of the Year. And then four of the songs were nominated for Best Song Written for a Movie out of five. So they dominated the whole category, but they don't get the Album of the Year nomination. Very confusing for me. The Grammys just hate fun, I guess. Ryan Gosling got a nomination as well for I'm Just Ken. But apparently the Barbie soundtrack was not enough for an Album of the Year nomination. Songs that were snubbed completely, Paint the Town Red by Doja Cat. Zero Grammys. They have to be capping. You just cap so hard. You're capping right now. It will continue to be lonely in her mansion because she'll have no Grammys to put up there. Shakira, her song, the BZRP 53 song, that was basically just like the best diss track to an ex of all time. Like, she shitted on him so fucking hard. And anytime that song was performed live, I've never seen a crowd possessed so much because they love chanting every single word. I don't even speak Spanish and I know what she's saying in that song. So I, like, it's just so good. Like, I, that's truly like a global smash hit because you don't have to speak Spanish to know exactly what she's saying. Like, you just know the words because she's name dropping. She's like, it's so fucking good. So I don't really know why that wasn't nominated. I'm actually so pissed about that. That's probably the maddest I am about all of these. Boy's a Liar Part 2 wasn't nominated. I'm mad about that too. Again, super impactful. Like, those two young gals gave us everything these veterans couldn't. So I think they're just mad. And again, the Grammys hate fun. Die For You by The Weeknd and Ariana Grande, another number one hit, was totally snubbed. The Weeknd will never submit his songs for Grammy nominations ever again, though. So maybe they would have been nominated if The Weeknd didn't hate the Grammys. But I love a petty bitch who sticks by his grudge. So good for The Weeknd for not submitting himself. I actually think that's cool as fuck. And Ariana Grande, she doesn't care. She doesn't want a Grammy. She already has two. That's enough for her. She wouldn't even go to the award show if she won. Maybe Frankie Grande could accept it on her behalf or Toulouse because she just doesn't like showing up to award shows. So they don't care. Also, I Got It Bad by Addison Rae. What the fuck? That is such a bomb. Not left my gym playlist all year. And I'm not even kidding. For Song of the Year, I feel like the snubs, like, Song of the Year is like a songwriter's award. I feel like the snubs should be like Pound Town, My Coochie Pink, My Booty Hole Brown. Like, how did that not impress the Grammy Academy? Ski should have also been nominated. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, Best New Artist Award. Here are the nominees. Coco Jones, Gracie Abrams, Fred Again, Ice Spice, Jelly Roll, Noah Kahan, Victoria Monet, and The Warren Treaty. So I actually know more of these people than I thought I did. I was invited to a Fred Again show last week, but I couldn't go. I was so upset. But, like, everyone's talks about him. Coco Jones, I See You, Coco Jones. Gracie Abrams, I See You, Gracie Abrams. A few of these people I don't see. When I posted about this on TikTok, everyone said that Jelly Roll should win. I don't know who Jelly Roll is. I don't know. But, you know, I don't mean to sound ridiculous, but if I saw Jelly Roll walking down the street, I wouldn't know a thing. So good for Jelly Roll, but I think everyone thinks Ice Spice will win that. To me, the only person who was giving her real competition is Victoria Monet. Snubbed from that category, Renee Rapp, in my opinion. I was kind of shocked she was not up there because she's getting the biggest push this year, but it's just not really paying off for her. Anyway, we're going to wrap this up, but to see my opinions on the pop categories, go to my TikTok, Petty Pop Culture. I also put it on YouTube and Instagram. But any more snubs for the Grammys are Selena Gomez for Calm Down featuring, well, it's Rema featuring Selena Gomez. I'm upset for Rema. I think he deserves it, but I'm happy Selena Gomez will remain Grammy-less. And that's that on that. She should remain Grammy-less. Melanie Martinez snubbed. They probably didn't want her to show up in that outfit that she always wears. Ava Max, I'm livid about that. She should have got a dance recording nomination, but she didn't for Diamonds and Dance Floors. And now life has lost all of its meaning for the last time. And I don't know, you know when you love an album so much and you like promote it to all your friends and like on your Instagram and on your TikTok, like you feel you have a stake in that album and you're partially responsible for its success. That's how I feel with Ava Max. So the fact that she's not nominated, I'm pissed. Kim Petras snubbed, and this is really her year, so I'm mad about that. Sam Smith, their album was so good. Are you kidding? I'm pretty sure I've talked about how much I love I'm Not Here to Make Friends by Sam Smith multiple times on this podcast. So mad. Snooze by SZA, snubbed. No solo BTS members. Aren't they in the ARMY, though? So, oh my God, isn't their fan base called the ARMY? Now they're in the ARMY? That's crazy. Morgan Wallen, I've never heard of her, but she's been snubbed. And the Jonas Sisters, again, they were snubbed for everything. So I predicted those four. And if I get more than half of them wrong, I will shave my head live on this podcast. You do, you're All right, you guys. So the class we're entering right now is Brewing Couples 201. These aren't new couples anymore. So we talked about Bad Bunny and Kendall Jenner on SNL a few weeks ago. Now, Kylie's boyfriend, Timothy, is hosting. Well, he did host SNL this week. That's so weird to me that both of their boyfriends like hosted back to back. Bad Bunny and Timothy are like the Make-A-Wish Foundation employers that are giving clout to dying empires, the Kardashians and SNL, because they're both not doing very well right now. But Kylie went to support him at SNL, and then they went to an after party together. Did you guys watch Timothy's episode? I thought it was good. I love the Troye Sivan skit. I love that he was like comfortable enough to do that. He like made fun of Troye Sivan's like dancing and that they kind of both have the same like build. He made fun of the actor's strike being over and sang a song about it, and that he can finally promote Wonka now. His episode overall was like very funny. Even Kris Jenner posted on her Instagram and told everyone to tune into SNL tonight. Oh my God. To like support her potential son-in-law, Timmy. That's crazy. That's how you know they met before. And maybe that there is a contract. Because Jenner's like, you give us clout, I'll promote you too, baby. So good for them. I feel like when I would previously talk about Kylie and Timmy, everyone would be like, Kylie's gonna crush him. Or like, there'd be that photo of those two people's legs in the bathtub, and one was like suffocating and dying, and the other ones was like full. And they were like, that's Kylie and Timmy in the bath. Like, everyone was just saying Timothy cannot handle all the woman that Kylie is. But if you really look at Kylie now, she's just as skinny as him. The Kardashians must be having Ozempic parties in LA. Remember when Rosie O'Donnell on TikTok was like, they're having Ozempic parties here in LA. I clearly was not invited to those Ozempic parties. Oh my God, because of my back pain, I've gained like 10 pounds. It's horrible. But I just cannot stop eating. I literally ate two Starbursts when I walked into this room. Like, it's so awful. But yeah, Kylie is so skinny. So skinny. Like, all the Kardashians have Kendall's build now. Just very, like, slender. Like, they all look like a family now. Kendall used to be the odd one out, but now Kendall's, like, the leader of the pack. She set the trend for all the Kardashians. Kylie probably lost, like, 20 pounds. And I'm not even trying to, like, comment on someone's bodies. I know everyone's like, don't discuss people's bodies. But I feel like when there's just such a pervasive, like, social message into what, like, the skinny agenda that Hollywood is trying to push. I'm not doing this in a malicious way. I'm just saying, like, Kylie and Timmy are the same size now, you know? Kylie's picking on someone her own size. And I will say, I was watching The View the other day, and they just randomly started talking about Kylie and Timothy, and they were like, why do we think they don't have anything in common? And I was like, wait, they probably do have stuff in common. Why did we think Kylie had more in common with Travis Scott than Timothée Chalamet? Or why did we think Kylie had more in common with Tyga, who she dated when she was underage? Like, if you think about it, Timmy and Kylie might have more in common than any of her relationships in the past. Like, I don't know. They both are white as ghosts with thin lips. I'm kidding. Timothy is, he has a role that is channeling what Kylie does in her real life, which is fuck with kids in factories. I'm kidding. Don't hold that against me. I'm kidding. Anyway, they probably have a lot in common. And I do think their relationship is real. Do I think it maybe like started as half PR, half real? Yes. But I do think they actually enjoy each other, and good for them. I feel like Timothy just has that kind of like fuckboy energy that Kylie likes. Because if you really, like, when anyone does an impression of Timmy, they make him just look like a fuckboy. So, yeah, that's Kylie's vibe. And Travis is probably real upset about that, but that's none of his business anymore. So, let's move on to Taylor and Travis. They're 100% confirmed relationship dating official now, at least in my book. Taylor confirmed their relationship in the most Taylor Swift way at the Eras Tour the other day. And I love that she knows she doesn't have to go through any mainstream outlet to like give a quote, to like announce their relationship or like do it on her Instagram. She just does it on tour in a song. She changed the lyrics to Karma live on stage to Karma is the guy on the Chiefs. coming straight home to me. And Travis was in the crowd. Isn't that so fucking cute? They're almost like, ew, like stop being so lovey-dovey PDA couple. It's almost unbearable, but it's also so fucking cute. Like they're throwing their love in our face. And for single people, that could be very triggering. Anytime I would go to the Eras Tour, honestly, well, I went twice, but I would leave. And my main emotion both times when I left was like, wow, I've never really been in love, because all her songs are about love. And like, of course, I appreciate them and like kind of have been. But at the same time, like I want to experience like a Taylor Swift-esque level love. So I'm happy that they're officially dating. And that just confirms it to me, because in the lyrics of Karma, like they say, like she says, Karma is my boyfriend. And then she says, Karma is the guy in the Chiefs. So it seems like the analogy going on just confirms it. But also, are they too old to be like calling someone your boyfriend and girlfriend? Like, when does that title stop? Like, am I allowed to have a boyfriend in my 30s, or is that embarrassing? Like, I don't know. Or is that just like a teenager thing? Either way, happy for them. After the show, I'm sure you've seen the video. She like ran up to him and embraced him and kissed him. It was giving the notebook. I'm very happy for them. I saw someone on TikTok today predict that they would be engaged by spring. That might be a little bit of jumping off a very tall something to conclusions. I'm not sure if he's the one. We've seen a lot of public rebounds lately, relationships that don't last very long, but they've burned very bright. A lot of them have to do with Pete Davidson, but it's giving the same exact vibe as Pete Davidson right now. Just every moment we turn, there's some PDA. Every moment there's a new headline. So maybe it will fizzle out like Pete and Ariana, or Pete and Kim, or maybe it will last like Courtney and Travis. Like they're making out everywhere. They're doing all this PDA, massive, grandiose displays of love, and they're married and have a baby on the way. I don't know. And then there's the quotes that like maybe she's rushing in. Apparently Selena Gomez and Gigi Hadid think she's rushing into this relationship. They don't think it's gonna last. I don't know. I feel like Taylor was just so exhausted from her 6-year relationship where she didn't feel appreciated and loved, that she like doesn't give a shit who sees how much the public gets to be let into their relationship. She is just here to feel loved, be loved in a big, bold way, because she wasn't for so long. So whether they last or not, this is fulfilling Taylor's heart. And that makes me very happy. But I feel like she is doing quite an experiment with this relationship, because usually it's private. It's running to the car, out the door, so no paparazzi gets photos of you, covering your faces with umbrellas, going in through the back at restaurants so no one ever sees you. And now it's like, she's not taking any path of privacy or secrecy. She is letting the public in almost in excess, like in ways where she doesn't have to. Like she didn't have to change the lyrics while she was performing. She didn't have to run up to him after the show in front of everyone and make out with him. She went to a restaurant this weekend with Travis and she walked through the front door. And then they went to go sit with her dad, just like there were like any other people. And the whole restaurant like got up and started like roaring in applause for her for just walking in. So she's doing all these normal things that she would never do before. And I feel like it's just because she's accepted how famous she is. She's accepted that she's Michael Jackson level famous and that it's never going to go away. It's past the point of no return. The damage cannot be undone. So anyone in her life is going to have to live with that, live in that fishbowl with her and deal with it. And why not just put them through that test right off the bat? And she's gotten all the criticism and slut shaming in the world. So having a public relationship with Travis, just another guy, like it doesn't really, it's no sweat off of her back anymore. You know, if they call her a slut, it might be worth it for once for Travis. So good luck to them. I am dying for the updates on their PDA parade. I love them.
Going down, how'd you turn it right around? Ooh, ooh, I'm falling in love.
All right, you guys. So Hollywood has continued on with the healthy tradition of choosing a new young actress to hate. And there's a young actress getting so much hate right now in her brand new movie that I feel invested in and want it to do so good is coming out this week. The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbird and Snakes, coming out in 4 days. Couldn't be more excited. Read the whole book in 2020 during lockdown. I was completely immersed in it. Maybe my second favorite Hunger Games book, competing for my first. Such an incredibly written prequel. It's all about President Snow and how he kind of started as an innocent, pure child, but was then turned into this dictator. And you're like, it's a story about how one human can grapple with empathy. Do I feel bad for the people in the districts? Do I not? Do I know that we're doing this to them for a reason? Or is that reason not good enough? Like, President Snow has so many nuanced sides to him in this, and it's very good. So it's going to make you like the Snow White a bit. But there's one Snow White that people do not like, and it is Rachel Zegler. So she is the lead in The Hunger Games prequel, but she's also the lead in the new Snow White movie that's coming out in 2025 now, which is delayed majorly from the actor's strike. And wasn't that transition so good? Oh my God, from saying it will make you like the Snow White. Like, I came up with it in my head on the fly. I didn't write that down. I'm so smart. Anyway, so people don't like Rachel Zegler. She's a 22-year-old actress. She's been in West Side Story and Shazam. That's where you might know her from. She's younger than me. That's so crazy. But she definitely has that like young, like vibrant, like spunky, like fresh on the scene, enthusiastic actress vibe. But there's a lot about her that people don't like. So we're going to go through like 4 or 5 reasons why people don't like her. So the first reason that you've probably seen about this was such a major discussion on like the national scale, just one comment she made about Snow White. So as the lead in the live action of Snow White, you know, Disney's doing live actions with everything right now, even though apparently they're losing the money. I don't know. I think live actions are so cool. I'm obsessed with them. Like, why wouldn't you want to see The Little Mermaid in live action? Like, the fuck? And why wouldn't you want to see The Lion King in live action? That's so cool. Like, seeing real lions fight, I feel like everyone would be so into that. So I feel like people should stop shitting on the live actions. I think they're cool. And also, you guys are like, so not you guys, but everyone is so like desperate for nostalgia. It's like, pick a side. Do you want to relive your faves or not? Anyway, so she said she basically hates the Snow White original, like completely. She said she's terrified of Snow White. She hasn't watched it since she was a kid and it's extremely out of date. And then she did an interview where she said like, it's for the best that they're rewriting it and making a whole new Snow White that is a much better version, where basically she's going to be a girl boss. So she said the original movie came out in 1937, and evidently so. She's not going to be dreaming about true love. She's going to be dreaming about becoming the leader she knows she can be, and the leader that her late father told us she could be if she was fearless, brave, and true. So Snow White is a girl boss. I feel like the original Snow White is like such an antithesis of girl boss. This definitely got under a lot of people's skin, especially because we as like a society are starting to move past the whole girl boss conversation. But let me just play this really quick so you just know her delivery, because the delivery is probably the number one most important thing here.
You said you were bringing a modern edge to it on stage. What do you mean by that?
I just mean that it's no longer 1937, and we absolutely wrote a Snow White that
she's
is
not going to be saved by the prince.
She's not going to be saved by the prince, and she's not going to be dreaming about true love. She's dreaming about becoming the leader she knows she can be, and the leader that her late father told her that she could be if she was fearless, fair, brave, and true. And so it's just a really incredible story for, I think, young people everywhere to see themselves.
She said to see themselves in. So I think the messaging of that is good. But she continues on and she said, there's a big focus on her love story of a guy who stalks her. Weird. So we didn't do that this time. Basically, she shit on Snow White in like every single aspect of the movie. And of course, when you're doing a live action, you want to guarantee a money-making success by bringing all the fans of the original to the theaters to watch their favorite story come to life with humans. And now that she said that, she's kind of turned all the Snow White fans against the live action. And it really did infuriate people, because Snow White kind of was the first movie that launched Disney's empire. So she dares to be this young actress getting this first role and then completely shits on it. There's a petition for her to be kicked off of the movie because it wasn't filmed yet, called Not My Princess Petition. Tweets about her say things like she's a walking PR nightmare. She needs to be humbled. She's so entitled. I feel like if you've ever seen the clip of Tana Mojo being like, she's so fucking annoying. She's never been punched in her face in her whole fucking life and she won't shut the fuck up. That's what people think about her. And she just says all these things about Snow White and misogyny with a very like smug head tilted to the side. More like she's just on her moral high ground on her soapbox and like she's talking down to older generations or fans of the movie. So people were very pissed off with her. She also said that she didn't, well, she was also saying that she kind of like wrote the movie, but she didn't do that. The person who actually wrote the new girl boss version of Snow White is Greta Gerwig, the same woman who wrote Barbie. That's maybe the most like girl boss, but also anti-girl boss film of all time, because like Barbie doesn't want Ken, but there's also that whole monologue in Barbie that you don't have to be great or extraordinary or perfect. You can just be an ordinary woman, and there should be an ordinary Barbie for a woman who just wants to wake up to the day, put on a cute blouse and not feel bad about herself. And I feel like people kind of like saw themselves in Snow White because they liked that traditional life of like, I want the prince to come save me because so many aspects of my life suck. It'd be great to just have like one man like come and save me once. We would love that. And I do agree with people when they say that. And I totally get why they're frustrated with this new young actress being like, fuck Snow White. This whole story is stupid. She's like appalled by it. She really hates it. So I totally get it. And I think this movie would have done well 3 years ago when the whole girl boss movement was still, I think, more necessary and not nailed into people's heads enough. Like, we hadn't set that precedent in the entertainment industry that movies like that can sell. But now that we've had so many movies like that and we've had so many adaptations where, or like remakes where scripts were changed to put the female character on a more empowering high ground, I don't think, like, I feel like the overcompensation has been done for women not being girl bosses or being like the traditional, like softer, more passive woman in the past. Like, we've overcompensated for that. So I feel like the girl boss narrative can definitely fade a little. Like, there can be sides to, like, I don't know. I just feel like both things can exist now. Like, not, it doesn't have to be so everyone needs to be a girl boss. There can definitely be films of that traditional love story brought back into the mainstream. So I totally get everyone's frustration. But at the same time, Rachel didn't write the movie. She was told what to say in the marketing team while she was being interviewed. She definitely has talking points that she needs to mention. And I will say, like, when other male actors kind of shit on characters or shit on their own movies, like Robert Pattinson hated Twilight and Harrison Ford didn't like Star Wars, no one really cared and they just thought it was like funny and charming. But when Rachel doesn't like Snow White, it's like, we hate her. She's the worst ever. So that's definitely one reason why people don't like her. Another reason is comments she made about the strike. So she's playing Snow White, but she couldn't film it. So she said, if I'm going to stand there for 18 hours in a dress of an iconic Disney princess, I deserve to be paid for every hour it's streamed online. Now let me play it for you because, again, her delivery is like the most important thing here.
I'm going to stand there 18 hours in a dress of an iconic Disney princess. I deserve to be paid for every hour that it is streamed online.
So I'll play that on the screen too so you can like see her face. But people just see a common thread of like entitledness, self-serving, like narcissistic within her. That's what people are saying because all of these ways she's like it always seems like she has a problem with the camera. She's like scolding the camera like Snow White is gonna be a girl boss, like the old version was so bad, or I will be paid 18 hours for standing in this dress. I feel like people just do not like her delivery or her attitude at all, and they don't like how she only mentioned how she needs to be paid for standing in a Snow White dress. Like, that's hard at all. Like, That was a weird thing for her to say. Admittedly, she should have been like, everyone on the crew needs to be paid. Actors who are in the background or on smaller indie films, like who work paycheck to paycheck, they need to be paid. She was really only talking about herself, but the sentence was almost like she wanted to get hate for that. Like, if I'm going to stand in a Disney princess dress all day, most people would like to do that. So it's weird that that was her big like fight for the strike. And I can definitely understand why it would come off a bit aloof or self-important. But again, I feel like she was standing up for a cause that people want. And she was maybe using the clout of being Snow White to get that clip to go viral so the strike would end faster or more people could get on the strike's side and demand change for the actors. Like, she was like, I'm Snow White, I'm going to be in this big movie and I can't film it and I'm pissed off about that. So I get what she's saying. I think she has good intent, but her delivery is really, really bad. Another reason people don't like her is because she was in like a Marvel or a DC. I don't know what Shazam is, if it's Marvel or DC, I don't know. But whichever one it was, she was asked on the red carpet why she was put in, like, why did she want to be in Shazam so bad? Like in job interviews, when they're like, why do you want this job? And you're like, because I love it and I'm so passionate about it. It's what I do all the time. Like, you don't actually mean that though. So her response was that she was like, I needed a job. But she said it like with that same, I'm scolding the camera kind of smug vibe. She was like, because I needed a job. So people just really don't like her attitude with most things. Like, again, it comes back to the entitlement. You needed a job so you get to be in a DC movie. People just really get turned off by her off-putting personality. Let's just say that. So number four is she was in West Side Story with Ansel Elgort. And around that time, a lot of horrible accusations of like physical abuse to his partner were coming out about Ansel Elgort. And she kind of like stood by him or didn't speak up against him even after the movie was out or say anything on the behalf of that. So people were like feeling like she's this fake feminist if she's going to be all about the girl boss movement, but not stand up against Ansel Elgort, because if you don't know, the things he's done are really terrible. I definitely have a TikTok about it if you want to search like why everyone hates Ansel Elgort, petty pop culture on TikTok. What he did was super bad. So yeah, Rachel came forward and she kind of gave a response to everyone feeling scolded by her and hating her personality, basically. And she said, I never wanted to come off as ungrateful for the opportunities I have. I'm the most grateful person alive, but I'm also keeping it real.
Video is going to get taken out of context. And I know that at this point, I can't really stop people from doing that because that's what my whole existence on the internet is. It's just me being taken out of context and stuff, which is fine. That's what I signed up for, isn't it? But I never want it to come off as me being ungrateful for the opportunities I have. When I say that this has been the biggest adjustment of my life, like understanding the way my life operates now, being who I am, and the things that I've been so fortunate to make, it comes with so much ground that I never thought I would be able to cover, and that people think I'm doing poorly, and other people think I'm doing gracefully, and I don't think I'm doing it at all. So when I tell you that it's hard, I just mean to be inside my brain. That's hard. And I'm there 24/7. I can't get out of it. And
I actually love that response. I really do. I never want to come off as ungrateful for the opportunities I have. I'm the most grateful person alive, but I'm also keeping it real. And she was crying in that video as well. I don't have it with me, but I can like add it onto here. I can like pause the screen and add it. But yeah, I feel like she may come off a bit smug and entitled, but a lot of people take her clips out of context. They just play the bad part, but there's also a lot of other clips like, I'm so grateful to be in Shazam. Of course, I was auditioning for this role because I needed a job, but I also auditioned for 50 roles and I was so lucky and grateful to be able to get this one. And she's so grateful to be Disney and, you know, the Disney like lead girl and be in Snow White. But no one really saw her saying that part. She's very active in the whole strike movement, but just that little clip of her seeming to only care about herself as Snow White. Like, I feel like everything she says is right, but she can just change the way she says it. And I'm not against Rachel Zegler. I'm excited to see all her movies, especially The Hunger Games. I think she just, like, I'm not saying she needs to be softer or a more likable woman. I just think she can add a little bit more empathy because, like, just more empathy in the little statement she says, because we live in the 10-second clip age. 10-second clips of you are what goes viral. So if she's on a red carpet being interviewed, she just needs to make sure to be a little bit more empathetic. And what I noticed about her when I was watching interviews for the Hunger Games, she just seems like she knows she's this young, fresh-faced actress, but she wants to be taken super seriously. So she likes to say, like, very bold, almost like powerful, like, statements, or almost like prove herself in a way. So I feel like Rachel Zegler is just a young person who's really trying to prove herself and be accepted by her peers and the whole acting world, but it's turning off the public. So I think she needs to be less worried about proving herself and just more worried about being real and letting the acting prove herself. And I think it will once all these movies come out, because again, none of them are even out. So get ready for The Hunger Games and watch Snow White if you want to when it comes out in a year or two. I can't tell you what to do. Hunger Games is out November 14th. Are you coming to the tree? I told you to run so we both be free. Strange things that happen in a stranger would be. If we met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree? For necklace of hope, side by side. All right, you guys. So another award I want to talk about today, maybe a more prestigious award than a Grammy, is People's Sexiest Man Alive Award, an award I hope to win. They always give it to a middle-aged or a little bit past that man. It's always someone in their 40s. So I have a long, long time to go until I can win that award because I'm so young. But the winner of People's Sexiest Man Alive this year is... So the winner of People's Sexiest Man Alive is Patrick Dempsey, McDreamy from... Grey's Anatomy. And yeah, he's definitely sexy. I will give him that. Is he the sexiest man alive? No. He's 48 years old. I feel like it's taken him way too long to win this award, given past winners. It's like ABBA not getting a Grammy till they're like in their 60s. Like, they should have gotten a Grammy a long time ago. Patrick Dempsey should have gotten this award a long time ago. But I don't know who named people the arbiter of sexy men, or like who gave them the right to name the sexiest man alive. Imagine if they had an award called the sexiest woman alive every year. That shit would not go over well. But honestly, men love being objectified, and everyone knows that. So that's the only reason why they're allowed to get away with this. I love being objectified. Like, if you guys want to leave a comment being like, Patty, stop talking. You're so annoying when you start talking. You look amazing till you start talking. Like, leave comments like that. I would love that. But so I feel like the award of Sexiest Men Alive is usually a curse, because that means everyone's going to pick you apart and call you very ugly. Like, every year, there's so many quote tweets of the announcement of who it is, and people like, this person? Seriously? They're the sexiest men alive. Patrick Dempsey, I feel like, was a softer one. Like, people unanimously think he's at least good looking. But there's a lot of people in the past who have not gotten off very well with this award. So I'm going to rank from 1 to 10 the last 10 years of People's Sexiest Man Alive. Number 10 is the least sexy, in my opinion. Number 1 is the most sexy. So number 10 of the last 10 years, Blake Shelton. He won in 2017. I don't know why Blake Shelton would win that award. I do think he's so funny. He's a cute guy. But what is the opposite of a sexual awakening? Like, that's all I have to say. That is what Blake Shelton is to me. I don't know why Gwen Stefani was with him. Again, I'm sure he has a great personality, but he just has a humor that's like dad humor. Like, I can't get on board with it. I would never pick Team Blake on The Voice, even if he was the only one who turned around for me. Number 9, Adam Levine. He won in 2013. I feel like people do think he's attractive, but after he cheated on his girlfriend like that with like 7 Instagram hoes, I just can't get by. I can't get by. He doesn't have those moves like Jagger. he's not hot to me. Number 8, Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd would in 2021. Why does everyone think Paul Rudd is the hottest person on this planet? I don't think that. And I know everyone loves to get with their step siblings these days. Like, that's like the number one search engine result on a certain website. And I know in Clueless, he got with his step sibling. That's like what he's most famous for. But even if he was my stepbrother, I would not get with him. Number 7, John Legend. He's cute, but he just has that baby face to me. It would feel wrong. And I think Chrissy Teigen would beat my ass. Number 6, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. He's definitely attractive, and I do like a guy in steroids, but it's not giving Dwayne The Rock. It's giving Dwayne The Boulder. It's just giving too much, but I'm not opposed to it. I do think he's attractive. Number 5, Idris Elba. He's 51, but aging like fine wine. Like, he's genuinely attractive. And yeah, that's all I have to say about him. Number 4, Chris Evans. He would have been lower on this list until that photo of him leaked. Then he moved up that list, if you know what I'm saying. So me and Lizzo can share him. Number 3, David Beckham. So delicious, so scrumptious. If anyone thinks David Beckham is not attractive, you should get your eyes checked. You need a thick pair of glasses, because I would bend it for Beckham, or bend it like Beckham, whatever. Number 2, Michael B. Jordan. I mean, come on now. He's an icon. He's a legend. He is the moment. He can smash me in between his thighs, suffocate me. He can do whatever he wants to me. I love Michael B. Jordan. Number 1, though, the winner of the 2014 Sexiest Man Alive, and he's actually sexier. He has only gotten sexier since he's won. And I'm not just saying that. Like, he truly has. Chris Hemsworth. Chris mother effing Hemsworth. He is genuinely the sexiest man alive. He should win that award every single year. I'm not a home wrecker, but I would get on that wrecking ball like Miley Cyrus naked and wreck that home for Chris Hemsworth. I would go to his front porch, ring his doorbell to get his attention. And then when he inevitably ignores me, I would just rip my heart out on his porch, put it on his welcome mat, and just die right there. Because he is that gorgeous. And he's packed on those steroids ever since. So good for Chris Hemsworth. Have you guys seen Zac Efron's new chin? I feel like someone needs to get to the bottom of what happened there. And I know when that whole thing happened, like the new revealing of Zac Efron's face came out, everyone kind of went with the story of something happened with his hormones, like his steroids. That's what like the doctors are saying online. His story was that he was running in his house, tripped and fell and hit his chin on a fountain. And I guess that's believable, but he would have had to like hit that fountain. You know what I'm saying? But his jaw just looks even more different now. And he still looks like a daddy. He's still attractive, but Zac Efron just looks so different these days. If you guys think you know what happened to Zac Efron, please, please tell me. Yeah, I know he know me, but he'd rather just lie. If I tell him jump, he gon' ask me how high. And I know his fears, but he never met mine. Never met mine, never, never met mine. All right, so we're going to finish with some very upsetting, like extremely disturbing news, like trigger warning for sure. DTV, domestic violence. It's very upsetting. So you all know Keke Palmer. She grew up in front of our eyes on Aquila the Beach, or Jackson VP, was filmed in front of a live studio audience, just like this podcast. No, just kidding. She was in Scream Queens, one of my favorite shows of all time. Recently in an Oscar-nominated role for Nope, that she absolutely killed it. And so, and she's just the meme queen. She's not just a scream queen. She's a meme queen. She has maybe, like, she's genuinely in the running for the most iconic meme creator of all time. Her, Wendy Williams, Tiffany New York Pollard, they're all in the running for that. So she's just an icon. And last year, she had a really iconic SNL moment where she revealed her baby bump during her monologue. And she did it in the most funny, but also like charming and cute way. And I was so happy for her. It genuinely filled me with so much joy, because you know, we just saw her grow up in front of our eyes. And I love that her life was going down that path that she wanted. Like, when I'm 30, I want a baby and I want to be with a guy that I love. And I'm like, how wonderful how her life is turning out for her. And we love that for her. You go, Keke Palmer. But all of that has completely washed away in these last few days because we found out that the father of her children, Darius Jackson, someone who she was with for 2 years since August 2021, who they have an 8-month-old child, Leotis Jackson, with, he has been abusing her for basically their whole relationship. Photos of him abusing her were leaked all over the internet. You've probably seen them. I'm not going to put them on the screen just out of respect for her, but all over online, because she filed a lawsuit against him to get a restraining order and permanent custody, sole custody of their child. Like, she wants him to never see this child ever again. So this is basically what happened. Keke Palmer went to the courts with proof of him abusing her, with security footage photos, like in their house, that he must not have known were there, that she set up in case this happened. And I love that women like play chess. Like, men are just so fucking dumb and barbaric and do these terrible, disgusting things. But she was like, I'm going to need proof of this and I will get my child and he will never see it again. So very, very smart. But she also had photos of a very recent incident from just last week on November 5th, where Darius Jackson trespassed into her home without her knowledge or consent, threatened her before lunging for her neck, striking her, and then throwing her over the couch and stealing her phone. Now, everything I'm about to say is just a series of absolute atrocious things that he's done to her. An event in February, Keke said that Darius choked her and body slammed her onto the stairs in their home after becoming violently jealous and irrationally angry over a bikini picture she posted online. And there's actually photos of her, of him, like, going up behind her on the stairs. There's not photos of slamming on the stairs themselves, but I don't even think the judge needs to see that to be able to believe what happened. In September, Keke said that she was concerned for her baby's safety because Darius became very frustrated with him while Darius was changing his diaper. Darius started getting rough while he was changing Leo, so Keke stepped in to make sure Darius didn't hurt the baby, but then it turned into like a tug of war with their baby, and Darius was getting very aggressive and would not let go. Eventually, Keke got the baby, but Darius then hit her over the head right in front of their kid before leaving the room. He would do things like throw her car keys away or out of her reach to prevent her from getting away from him. He would call her profanities in front of their son. There was an incident where he thought Keke was flirting with another woman, so he got her to a private location, destroyed all of her belongings, and then almost hit her with his car. Insane. Like, I know there was that one event at the Usher concert where Keke was wearing like a scandalous outfit and he didn't like that, so he publicly tried to embarrass her with tweets calling her an embarrassing mom and having no morals, and that he has all these morals and she could never. He has no morals at all. Anyone who would do the unspeakable like that, but especially in front of your child, like, what morals do you think you have? You just don't have any. That is, like, physical violence is the most unspeakable, illogical thing you could ever do. And then to the mother of your children, what are you trying to accomplish? I'm pretty sure he's just mentally ill. And so Keke tried to break up with him after the Usher incident. We know that for sure. But apparently Keke said, well, she tried to break up with him, he threatened to kill himself with a gun if she broke up with him and left him. Wow. It goes without saying that he's the most manipulative, narcissistic, evil man. And I don't know why. I just did not expect this, because for the first, like, their relationship in public seems so amazing. And I guess it just goes to show, like, I'm just very ignorant to the matter, because fortunately I don't know anyone who's experienced that, but it really does happen so much more commonly than you would think. And to the outside, you can seem totally fine. So it's weird that the Usher incident, we just thought was the worst of their relationship, when I saw that, I was like, oh, damn, they're having some issues. Like, I'm sure they're just fighting right now and, you know, they'll get back together. It didn't surprise me to see them back together. But that was just the peak of the iceberg, the tip of the iceberg. And that was really a red flag that none of us should have ignored. Remember when she took him back after the Usher thing? And it was like, this was like in August. And they posted a video for one of their birthdays. And everyone was like, oh, Kiki, why'd you take him back? You're like, this is your Khloe Kardashian moment. Like, you look dumb for taking someone back who embarrasses you like that. There's also old text photos of like him trying to cheat on her. So everyone was like, this is really your Khloe Kardashian moment. But knowing what we know now, oh my God, Kiki was just trying to diffuse the situation for a few more months while she could get this all together. So good for her for escaping that, not dealing with that, knowing her worth, knowing she's better than that, and just being like brave enough. Like, not saying that anyone would not know their worth, but you know what I mean? Like, being unafraid to go through the process of getting rid of him in her life and going to the courts and getting the security footage and the locks on the house. So yeah, all of this was proof. And if that isn't proof enough, Darius's brother put out a tweet that was like, my brother is the most evil, manipulative, asshole, most terrible human being I've ever met. Like, Darius's brother said this about him on a tweet. And then Kiki Palmer's mom, who has never spoken out publicly about Kiki's career in her whole life, but she's like been her stage mom since Akila and the Bee in 20 years, never said anything about Kiki's career, posted like a 2-minute face-to-face TikTok about, or Twitter video or something, about how Darius's brother better stop acting like he is innocent or was not enabling Darius to do this because he knew it was going on the whole time and you didn't try to help Kiki or stop your brother. Kiki's mom said this was even going on while Kiki was pregnant, and she was just putting all of this out there so we all knew like that both of the Jackson brothers were awful. But yeah. So Darius went to social media after Kiki went to the courts, and that's just how you know like someone is guilty. Like, there's one person who's going to the court with proof, and there's one person who's going through social media to try to manipulate the situation. But he posted a photo of him and his child, Leo, and the caption was, I love you so much, baby. I'll see you soon. Like, he'll see his kid soon, and that's what's on his mind here. I love you so much, baby. I'll see you soon. To me, it just seems like he was using his son as a prop to maybe lower any judicial repercussion that would be put onto him or try to get more custody or rights to see his child that I'm sure he knows he's fucked up and is about to lose the whole family that he had. Like, he had it all and now he lost it all, and he's not going to see his child soon. He's going to be seeing a jail cell soon, and he needs to be kept very far away from Kiki Palmer. I will also say, like, I think he thought tweeting might work for him because it worked for him during the Usher incident, but no one in this case is going to take his side. The Usher incident was a completely different thing, and this is Kiki Palmer's, this is like Kiki Palmer's internet. It's not yours. We're all on her side in this situation. So yeah, this sucks for him, but he did this to himself. And I like Kiki, what she last said about it. This was like the last little part in her lawsuit. She said, it is because of our son, Leo, that I was finally able to end my relationship with Darius once and for all and escape the abuse. Leo is the most important thing in my entire world to me. He needs and deserves to be safe and grow up in an environment free of violence. Yeah, I completely agree. And if Darius and his brother are abusers, like Kiki's mom said, that cycle just needs to stop. And Leo can't see that happen, think it's okay, or get traumatized by that, or of course be in the way of that. So Kiki, again, being one of the most amazing people we know, and she deserves the whole world. And I feel like this, although it's super traumatizing having to expel the father of your child from your life, this hard time will be so worth it. And very soon she will be feeling like her Kiki self again. So Kiki Palmer, we love you. sending our prayers and respect to you. All right, thank you guys for joining me today on Pop Culture University. Sorry if I was low energy or extra bitchy today. I feel like after researching the Rachel Zegler thing, I was like, wait, do I come off like her? Do I? Because I feel like I get some of the same backlash. People are like, you just sound so smug when you talk. And I'm like, wait, maybe that's why I like her. I would watch her interviews. I'd be like, I like this girl. But anyway, it's because of my horrible back pain. Like, I cannot even work out as much. Cleaning my house is hard because I can't, like, bend over to pick up my clothes or do anything. It's so awful. So, like, it even hurts to just sit down because the way, like, my spine is, like, compressing on my lower back right now just, like, hurts. Like, it feels good to stand up or lay down, but sitting is what hurts. It's, like, sitting and leaning forward. And I usually don't like to, like, tell people my health issues because what if I get the MRI and they're like, you're dying in a week or something, and then I have to tell everyone that? Like, I would rather just disappear, but whatever. I just decided to be open with y'all, but hopefully it's nothing too bad and it gets fixed very soon because this might be the most annoying pain I've ever been through in my whole life. But yeah, I hope none of you are experiencing anything similar and are having an amazing November. And yeah, I love you all. Students, make sure to respond to the question. If you're on Spotify, leave a comment. I want to chat with you guys there. DM me. I feel like I'm getting a lot better at hitting everyone up. Post me on your story. I'll always see you if you post me on your story just because there's a whole section for that. But yeah, I love all my students and I will see you guys next week. Hopefully I'll have this one posted on time as well because usually lately I've been like posting them on Thursday and being so late. But I feel like I'm getting the video portion down and getting better at just word vomiting for an hour straight without any pauses or stuff. So I hope you guys like the video version. And yeah, more to come. So I will see you guys next Tuesday. Class dismissed. Bye.